Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take a special focus on something that isn't doing too well in the United States. It's primary care. Primary care medicine is, good old-fashioned medicine where you see your own personal physician. And then, of course, that person can refer you to whatever specialist you need. But primary care is suffering in America, and it's suffering because, the economic incentives aren't there for young, talented physicians to go into primary care. There's not enough proper training. And, of course, primary care sometimes boils down to just being a gatekeeper to send people to expensive specialists administering high-tech treatments. So we need a revolution in primary care. And leading the charge is today's guest. He's James Maskell. And James has innovated and developed a new program called Revive Primary Care. And I'm going to let James tell you all about it. James, welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Nice having you aboard.
So great to be here. Thank you, Doctor.
Well, first of all, give us your background. How did you get into this? Have you always been interested in medicine?
Always interested. I was definitely the weird kid at school who did alternative medicine. I had chiropractic. I had homeopathy. My parents were very much aware of that. I had a bit of a rebellious phase where I thought I wanted to be an investment banker, and I did that for about a year. I really got interested in economics and sort of pursued that for a while. But after about 6 months on the trading floor of the biggest bank in the world, I realized that, there were big problems that needed to be solved, and American medicine sort of loomed front and center of a big problem that needed to be solved. And I had a hunch at that point, I think, that what I had learned growing up and my understanding of medicine growing up might help to solve some of those problems. So I moved to America. As you can hear, I grew up in England. My parents are South African. I moved to America, and I started to really learn as much as I could about holistic medicine, the way medicine works in America, and where might be some leverage points for changing that. And after 7 years of doing that, 8 years really, my gift to the world is Revive Primary Care, and I hope that it will play a role with so many talented other people who are looking at this issue to be able to make a significant difference to primary care and to medicine in my lifetime.
Well, there's an important element missing from primary care, and that is care these days, because often people get shunted into quick encounters with doctors, and sometimes, in the future, it may not even be medical doctors that they'll be seeing. They may be seeing nurses or physician assistants, so-called gatekeepers, who will determine whether they will have access to various forms of high-tech treatment. This, in my experience, is not true primary care. How does your vision differ from what's currently available?
Well, I agree with you that care is certainly not being provided, but I also feel like there are two words there. There's care and there's primary. And I think the other thing that we're starting to see is with so many chronic diseases born from modifiable factors, i.e. things that people can control, the primary care that one should be taking of oneself should not start in the doctor's office. It needs to start at home. So I really want to redefine both words, not just care, but primary as well, and start to put care a bit more primary and really make it a bit more caring, as you said. So it's really both of those things, and the word revive means to bring new life and consciousness to. I think we could both agree that that's really what needs to happen to primary care. And I try and keep it simple for everyone. What does this business do? We revive primary care. So those are some of the sort of core fundamentals that we started to build upon.
Well, it's interesting what you just said, because primary usually means first things first. And when it comes to primary care, we tend to wait for often very challenging conditions to develop, and then we address them. Or alternatively, in our drive to undertake preventive medicine, we substitute mammograms and colonoscopies and cholesterol tests for appropriate lifestyle measures that can really influence health. And just testing people with fancy schmancy tests I mean, it may detect emerging diseases, but that's not exactly getting to the root of the problem, is it?
No, it really isn't. And as I said, there are really four working with, over the last 7 years, working with key healthcare stakeholders and top holistic medical doctors. And, you know, I definitely salute your work in doing this. I know it's not been easy to be a holistic medical doctor over the last 30 years, but you've certainly blazed a trail for this, you know, big shift that we're seeing right now, more and more coming into functional medicine and alternative medicine. So it's a very exciting thing. But what I've really tried to do is to boil down what are the four main causes of chronic disease that are modifiable, that we can do something about, and to use video education to educate on those four causes. So that's really the primary thing that the site does. If you come to the site now, you'll see that there's videos on those four causes of chronic disease, and I'd be happy to talk more about what those are and how they impact. And then the second part of Revive Primary Care is actually to put you in contact with a physician in your area who is schooled in reversing chronic disease. You know, I just think we're reaching a tipping point, Dr. Hoffman, now, where in almost every zip code, there is a practitioner or a doctor who does this type of medicine. And so I think what we're seeing more and more is that there's a complete lack of trust in the traditional primary care direction. And one of the reasons why I feel like there is this big lack of trust is because, as you just said, I've actually spoken at this conference called Heal Thy Practice, and I know this year we're both going to be speaking at it, but it's a conference for primary care doctors. And what I heard 2 years ago that I couldn't shake was that hospitals were buying these primary care practices and telling those primary care doctors, look, you need to send a certain number of leads through to our hospital system every week or every month, or we're going to fire you and we're going to put in a junior doctor. So here you have a situation where the primary care doctor has gone from this place of trust, this place of the family doctor, to essentially being someone that is, you don't know when they refer you, whether that is because they're trying to meet a quota.
Right.
Or because they actually think that you need to see the hematologist. So, you know, when I heard that, and when I think people are feeling that and understanding that, at the same time, we see this shift towards holistic doctors and holistic medicine generally as a sort of an alternative primary care. And so our goal is to sort of accelerate that shift, you know, let people know that this is happening and help them to get in contact with someone who we believe provides true primary care.
Well, you know, I'll share with our audience my own personal experience, which I shared with you, James, when we had coffee the other day, is that I once had an opportunity to join forces with a major, major hospital system, you know, well-recognized, I won't state the name of that hospital system, in New York City. They were interested in grooming a model holistic doctor's practice, and so we had some preliminary discussions. And then they got back to me, and they had thought it over. And they said to me, look, you know, we really admire the things that you're doing. I think that your practice is great, and you're helping a lot of people. But when it comes to dollars and cents, it really doesn't make much sense for us to get involved with you, Dr. Hoffman, because the vast majority of your patients, they stay well. You're not seeing enough very sick patients to make it worthwhile for us because, let's face it, those are the patients that feed into the system, that go to the specialists, that occupy the hospital rooms. And then I got the idea that when doctors more and more are now joining hospitals, joining forces with hospitals because of, you know, the pressures of bureaucratic medicine, they just don't want the headaches. And so they say, look, I'm not going to do all my own paperwork. I'll let the hospital handle it. But often when hospitals shop for doctors, they look at doctors who have high volume practices that can, in a conveyor belt like style, feed a certain percentage of their patients each month into the belly of the beast, into the hospital system for processing for various types of various serious medical disorders. And that's not the style of medicine that I practice. I, you know, sometimes I refer to specialists. There's no question that from time to time my patients detune, so to speak, and they require hospitalization. But by and large, it's a wellness practice. It's preventive. We keep people on the right track, and, you know, there's a high degree of non-participation in traditional medicine.
Exactly. And I don't think that your experience is out of alignment with a lot of other people. And you can see that if you have a really good primary care doctor who's dealing with things at cause, who's inspiring their patients to want to take better care of themselves, who is really helping patients to get clear about their health goals and what it's going to take between you and them to move them in that direction, then you have a situation where, you know, healthcare costs are reducing significantly. And this is why I've chosen to base my business around primary care, because I feel like it's the lever point that that allows us to reduce medical costs as quickly as possible. Because I think we all know, I mean, part of the reason I got into this, doing economics and doing economics at a university in England, it was sort of a joke how expensive and how poor the outcomes were in American medicine. But at the same time, it offers a really great opportunity to really have something new and fresh and good new ideas to come forward. So I'm quietly optimistic about the future of American medicine. But I think what we're hitting on here is just the central part of it is that the central part of this whole thing is that this $3 trillion monster that is medicine is going to be driven by chronic disease, and we need to get more primary and develop and deliver more care early on so that these health issues don't get to a point where they need the most expensive treatment and the most intense treatment over a period of time in a hospital.
Well, first things first, let's define chronic disease. What diseases are good examples of chronic diseases, and what fall outside the definition of chronic?
Well, you're the doctor, Dr. Hoffman, but I would say, you know, some of the things that we're looking at are, you know, the big spenders. So heart disease, diabetes, type 2 diabetes, obesity, even things, autoimmune type diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, mm-hmm. Looking at things like Alzheimer's. More and more research is coming out to show that there are lifestyle factors that may start 10, 15, 20, 30 years ahead of the diagnosis, but are contributing to that end game pathology. And if we can take steps way up the river, we can avoid the problems downstream.
Well, yeah, great. That's a great summation. And I would add, you know, for example, there are instances of diseases which are well handled in conventional medicine, which are, you know, you really need a good, robust conventional medical system to deal with. So, for example, in 2005, I fell off my bike, broke my hip, and I was immediately 911'd to hospital for special surgery, where they did a remarkable job patching my hip together. That's one instance of, you know, it's not a disease that's particularly preventable, I guess, unless you sit around and don't do bicycling, in which case you're more likely to develop type 2 diabetes, which is a chronic disease. But an example where that might be due to a chronic disease might be in someone who has osteoporosis, an older individual, or even a middle-aged woman who breaks her hip because she's been suffering from osteoporosis because of lack of vitamin D and sedentary lifestyle, acidic pH in her body, not enough of the critical nutrients that are responsible for building bone. Those are chronic diseases that cost us billions and trillions of dollars each year, and they can be handled, you know, after the fact, but it's best to forestall them in the first place. So you boiled it down in a nice way to four major causes, things that we can attack in a primary care fashion, doctors as not just gatekeepers, but doctors as health coaches to help people attack these four major causes of degenerative and chronic disease. So share those with us.
So I think, the first that's very obvious, and you've had a lot better experts than me on this show, is diet. And I think that's absolutely clear that diet is playing a role. One of the interesting things, actually, doctor, is that there's a lot of things happening at the same time. So it's over the last 40 years, we've seen actually big changes in all four of these. So it's almost difficult to pick apart one, because actually they all have synergistic actions on each other. But the first is diet, and I think that we can all recognize that there's a part of diet that is very unsustainable, and it's playing a role in chronic disease. I don't want to spend too much time on that. There's a lot better people with a lot, a lot more credentials who can talk about diet, but I think that's clear that that's one. The second is stress. We definitely live in a higher stress environment, and it's probably not stress per se as distress. One of the cool things about stress in a certain way is that our ability to deal with stress, again, is the defining factor. You know, people have stress. Unless you're, again, sitting on the couch doing nothing, you are going to come into stressful situations. I had a child 4 months ago, so, you know, I sort of put myself in the firing line of stressful situations. But I think in a certain way, stress in itself allows forward progress and development of character and all these kind of things. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but the potential for stress in our life is definitely on the rise. And I don't know what percentage. I think it's something along the lines of 90% of primary care visits are some way have stress as an outcome. And there's more and more research that's showing a lot of those same chronic diseases that we spoke about earlier have a stress component. So would you disagree with either of those, Doctor?
No. Clearly, I mean, you're on the right track there.
Okay. Yes.
However, as you said, you know, we have to recognize that there's stress, and stress is a natural condition of human existence. And probably to some extent is good for us because, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger to some extent. And, the body acquires resilience when we properly adapt to stress. But when we suffer distress, there's all kinds of harmful chemicals that build up in the body. They can affect the brain, that affect the heart, affect blood pressure, affect inflammatory pathways, in fact, can affect the immune system. And so this is, I mean, clearly a major, major source of trouble. And we simply, I mean, in medicine, we never give any attention to coping strategies for stress. Our way of dealing with stress is to offer patients, I mean, in conventional medicine, is to offer patients antidepressants or sedatives, Klonopin, Ativan, Xanax, Zoloft, Paxil, you name it.
Yeah. Well, mental health is a whole other world, and maybe we can come back for another interview on that, but I have very strong feelings about that. You know, certainly some family issues that I've had to, to work with, and I just think the treatment of chronic mental health issues in America is absolutely disgraceful, and I think that's another area that I think that we can do a lot to help with in that. So I would say diet and stress are the first two. The third one is something that I think you'll appreciate is toxicity. Toxicity, it's so strange that as a society, we would never question that toxicity is playing a role in acute disease. So, we have a situation in Fallujah with depleted uranium, or Agent Orange in Vietnam, or even closer to home, fracking chemicals. You could have acute exposure to toxins, radiation. We don't doubt that toxicity plays a role in these acute diseases. And yet when it's not a lethal dose, or when it's not a dose enough serious to cause physical harm on the first try, everyone it seems like says, toxicity is not a big problem, but chronic toxicity is a big problem, and it is driving chronic disease. And there are a number of reasons why we need to be really concerned about toxicity. The first of which being is that there are more and more studies that are showing that this toxicity can go down through generations. So you can see the grandchildren of people in Vietnam who are now still deformed as a result of the Agent Orange that was sprayed in the 70s.
And there's actually a term for this, James. It's called epigenetics,
exactly,
which is how the environment can literally alter the expression of the DNA. You know, your DNA pretty much is fixed. I mean, from generation to generation, you lay down a blueprint, and then, when you find your mate and, the egg meets with the sperm, you create some new DNA. But the way that the DNA is expressed can be changed by either good diet or bad diet, any number of lifestyle factors. But certainly toxicity can damage the DNA, which then transmits faulty messages down the line from generation to generation.
Absolutely. And the good news is that the human body is an unbelievable detoxification machine.
Yes.
We are designed to do that, and it's really exciting to see that with, you know, sometimes very, very small changes, you can really improve the detoxification of the body, and you can detoxify a lot better. And, you know, this is just the crux of it. I know alternative medicine doctors and people involved in it have been laughed out of the room by scientists, quote unquote, because they're saying, oh, what is this detox you're doing? Or what is, you know, what are these toxins? But as I said, we're very well aware of it as society as an acute issue with toxicity. But when it builds up over time, like the smog in your hometown of Los Angeles, you know, we don't see any particular one thing causing it, but it's happening from a lot of things at the time. And this is actually what sort of got me interested in this whole world at the beginning, was because this is an economic concept called a negative externality. And they're hard, notoriously hard to measure, but they're very important. And I think they're more important than actually we give them credit for. And it's part of the, you know, part of the grounding of the company itself in looking to minimize negative externalities and maximize positive externalities, and we can talk more about that as we go along.
The company being the overall health of Americans in this case.
Yeah.
Right, and the whole medical system that tries to address these problems. And so that leads us to number four, and that is?
Well, the fourth one is actually the most interesting, I think. I mean, those three, I think, are in alternative medicine and holistic medicine, integrative medicine, you know, those three would have been probably things that everyone in that field would agree on, and so forth. But the fourth one is new and interesting and even more valuable, because I think that I've termed it immunity, but what we're really talking about in this is the new science regarding microbes and the human microbiome. This is a new study. The original study came out in 2011. It was a National Institute of Health study called the Human Microbiome Project. And for the first time, they were looking to map out all of the microbes that live in, on, and around us. And it has spurred an absolute explosion of interest in this world, because what we're seeing is that these good microbes, and by the way, 99% plus of these, of all microbes, are mutually beneficial, not just commensal. They don't just sit there and sort of do nothing. They are mutually beneficial for the host. We can't live without them. They can't live without us. And the sooner we start to realize that, the better. And so what I've determined this is immunity. It's bugs. And what we're seeing is that having a good, solid, robust microbiome, having lots of the good bacteria in your body, around your body, affects digestion, immunity, metabolism, skin health, gut health. Even more recently, there's been a lot of press about mental health. I think we'll only, one of the reasons why I love this topic so much is because it really teaches us some of the key concepts of holism. And holism is something that I don't think is well understood by society generally. But if we look at bugs, the clinical focus on bugs since Louis Pasteur in the 1890s, and even before that, Semmelweis, has really been looking at the pathologic bugs. And I think what we're seeing now is a shift away from the germ theory to more of a hygiene theory or a hygiene hypothesis, looking at the fact that for almost 100 years since penicillin was developed, our number one goal has been to find a bug and kill a bug and reduce disease from that. And I think that the long-term effects, the negative externalities, if you will, of that process has led us to a point where each generation is even more depleted of good bacteria. And the new science is suggesting that this might be fueling the allergy, pediatric allergy epidemic, which in the third world or in the developing world, you don't have these kind of same level of allergies that we get in America. Pediatric autoimmune disease, Also, a lot of the chronic and degenerative disease that we're talking about.
And even obesity. We think that certain, we're talking about a new term, infectobesity,
yep.
which is the belief that the wrong microbes that can infect our gastrointestinal tracts primarily, but also live on our skin, that these microbes can influence our metabolism, give us overweight, and give us insulin resistance and syndrome X. So the ramifications are just astounding. But, you know, the subject is primary care. And the last subject that you mentioned, the microbiome, I think is where primary care is really failing us, because the front lines of medicine, you know, when you get sick, you go to your primary care doctor all too often to receive an antibiotic prescription. Which deals short term with the problem, but long term may set you up for imbalances of the immune system, according to the microbiome and the hygiene hypothesis theory. So, we need, you know, at all four levels, we need to affect change at the primary care level. So, it sounds kind of, you know, you're taking on a big challenge here. This sounds a little quixotic. You know, how are you planning to revolutionize primary care through the Revive program?
That's a great question. So I think what we really have to come back to as physicians, in order for this to really change, what's necessary is a mass education program, right? Everyone needs to learn about these four, and everyone needs to do that. So how do we educate a lot of people at the same time? Well, one of the things that's come about that has allowed this big idea to really have some solid grounding is the internet. The internet is providing a system whereby the old education model is really falling away, which is one teacher at the front communicating to everyone at the same time in a lecture style format. And that's what we've done, you know, in medicine as well. Doctor's a patient. I'm paying you for your time. You're educating me. This is a very inefficient system, and in fact, this is what I'm going to be talking to those doctors about at Heal Thy Practice next month when you're there, Dr. Hoffman. I think we can do a lot better, and I think we can have a lot more of an efficient education system for medical education, and it involves a synergistic use of the internet with particularly high quality, very shareable video content curated by your new primary care doctor.
For medical students, but to educate the public, because a big part of this is a partnership with patients, as the patients will assume a new role. They'll no longer be passive recipients of care, but they'll be in partnership with their doctors.
All for the better. Actually, you'll see our program is actually launching in October, and you'll see that our main goal is to support the patient-practitioner relationship, which I really feel is the most powerful relationship in medicine. There's a lot of new digital tools that are coming out there that sort of bypass the doctor. I'm not interested in that at all. I'm interested in helping each patient and each person in America develop a mutually beneficial, empathetic, synergistic relationship with a guide who can help them and develop that. And I think the next generation of holistic medicine doctors are that type of practitioner. And it's not just the practitioner as well. I think that we get a lot of this type of support from our friends and family. And so I think what everyone needs is really a robust set of relationships that inspire them to want to be healthy. And I think that this has to start with the patient-practitioner relationship. And I think that if we can make I was very much inspired by a book by Seth Godin. It was actually not a book. It was a treatise called Stop Stealing Dreams. And it was sort of an e-book that he put out about his vision for the education system. And there's some amazing examples of, his ideas coming to light that I'm seeing on TED Talks and other things. But I just think that what he talked about was using repeatable, high-quality video resources as the education part, and then having the teacher, in this case the doctor, and if we go back to Latin, teacher and doctor were the same word, the teacher would be curating that information for patients on a case-by-case basis. So let me give you an example.
By the way, the word, I guess it's in ancient Greek for doctor, it actually means teacher.
Exactly.
I think it was from the Greek or the Latin. as well.
So let me just give you an example of this, Doc. So let's say your patient comes in and they've got, you know, some symptoms, and you start asking them about their lifestyle, and maybe they share with you that they have about 20 personal care products. It's a female, and she, you know, takes good care of herself, and she has these kind of things. Probably, likely, each one of those is obscenely toxic. There is a chance that is. In fact, most people would probably see that. So let's say now you want to educate that patient to make better choices about their personal care products and maybe their home cleaning products. So either you have to sit across from them and sort of convince them in your time that they're paying for, or you could say, hey, here's this video on YouTube that's animated and beautiful and well put together and has been viewed 2 or 3 million times by people around the world, and they like it and share it, which sums up the problem. And what I see is you as the doctor slash curator slash teacher inspiring people to look at resources that have been already created or are created, rather than you telling these people one-on-one or doing a handout or, you know, some other thing that may not be as credible. You know, Seth Godin said, you know, we already have Wikipedia. No one paid for it. Everyone did it out of their own generosity, and we have this amazing resource. In 5 years, there's going to be a video version of Wikipedia with high quality video content about every topic imaginable. The new education is not forcing people to remember stuff and taking tests. It's inspiring them to want to learn. And I think that a doctor in primary care is in an absolutely amazing position to be able to provide that inspiration.
Great. That's really a great statement, and it's a great vision of where things could go. You know, one big issue is, you know, I'm a product of medical school education, and medical school education, as much as it pays lip service to all these good concepts, doesn't really offer A, the instruction, or B, the career direction to put people into these roles. A very small percentage of idealistic medical school graduates go into primary care these days. You know, one of the problems is that, frankly, you can make a lot more money in other fields. You can become a cosmetic surgeon. You can become an ophthalmologist. You can become a radiologist. The lifestyle is also better because you don't have to see so many patients. Your hours are better. There are fewer emergencies. Perhaps you could work as a dermatologist and take care of skin problems. So there's less and less incentive. And plus, these days it's so damn expensive to go to medical school that a medical school graduate can graduate with hundreds of thousands of dollars of loan expenses that they have to pay back, and sometimes that that shapes career choices, because you know, you want to pay back that money pretty fast, especially if you you know, planning on getting married, starting a family, buying a house, and you know, starting a normal life after years and years of being cloistered with the books, doing pre-med and medical study.
Yeah. Well, I don't have that much sympathy for people who decide on their career choices based on money. And, you know, if you go in that direction, I think that's fine. But I also feel like the way that we're going to drive this, Doctor, to, I think the question you're asking is, how do we get people to uptake this? Is that kind of where you're going?
I think I'm also going to that we may need to incorporate other types of health practitioners. I think MDs, you know, there will always be MDs who, like me, you know, will be the oddballs who will select this field. I don't have a great deal of confidence that, you know, beyond a few percentage of each year's graduates of medical schools will go into this field. But we're seeing other types of health professionals specifically study to go into this field. And I'm thinking of the naturopathic medical community, certain what are called functional medicine chiropractors, well-trained physician assistants and nurses, and nutritionists who go on to advanced study with master's degrees.
Yeah. Well, that you've just described our team of revivers. If you add up functional medicine MDs plus naturopaths plus advanced acupuncturists and chiropractors who are studying that, that is basically our team, our nationwide team of revivers. There's one in every zip code, and we intend to put people in touch with those practitioners. And the way that we're going to get uptake on this, Dr. Hoffman, is one of the things that we're also seeing, and I learned from this practice, is that, you know, Obamacare is a, you know, patients complain about Obamacare, but it is nothing compared to what you're seeing from doctors and doctors looking at this. And so what I think is what doctors will respond to and what will make them make this shift and what will make this project and my project exciting to them is that I'm going to send them new people. I'm going to send them new people who are dedicated to their health and are educated about these four causes of chronic disease and are educated about the holistic paradigm. They don't want to see a symptom and, you know, whack-a-mole a symptom. They want to use their symptomology as a way for understanding what's going on more generally and to take strategies that help them get to, you know, back to robust health. If you had those kind of patients that were coming in, I think that you might be, and you had an incentive to develop a business that would work with those kind of people. My intention is to go and get the patients first, get them excited about it, because I know that if we can bring a group of patients together that are passionate about having a practitioner like this, we can force the change down the tubes because people want these type of patients. And also, doctor, there are some really exciting shifts in business models that are happening. I love going back to that conference because I see this year they're doing a whole thing on implementing group visits in a primary care setting. I think that's very interesting for the sort of social aspects of health. My mother-in-law lost 100 pounds last year, and it wasn't through any sort of surgery or otherwise. It was just having someone who was she was accountable to, who she would share what she was doing every day with her eating. Now, that sort of social structure could have profound differences. I really think group visits are interesting. I really think that some of the other systems they have in place with using health coaches and partnering a health coach with an MD are interesting. And the reason why I'm optimistic about American medicine is that if we were trying to implement some of this in a country where, like where I grew up in England, there's a lot of bureaucracy behind any sort of shift. About 1,000 people have to okay any sort of improvement. Whereas here, because, you know, the capitalist system that is part of medicine has got us into trouble, but I also feel like it might be the solution to the problem because we have a lot of people who are trying to innovate and hack healthcare and come up with better systems. And I'm very excited to see all the people are doing it and the amazing work that people are doing. And my hope is to develop a tribe of patients that are really passionate about this type of care and to essentially deliver so much value to them in their relationship with their new doctor that they're interested in going all the way with Revive Primary Care. And the vision for it, Dr. Hoffman, is really to use the collective, the power of the collective, to start to bargain on prices for the rest of the system. If you can imagine that, if we can control the doorway into the rest of the system, this primary care, we can be very, very clear and very, very demanding on the costs of everyone that we refer to down the line. And that's where the real power is, because the cost of medicine in America is not so much just being driven by, in part because we're sicker and in part because, you know, we're doing too many tests and defensive medicine. But the biggest thing that's affecting medicine is just the fact that it's so expensive. It's ridiculously expensive. Yes. And so we can, if we have more people coming together as a collective, then I think we can bargain for better cost outcomes down the road. And so my membership in Revive Primary Care is really designed to just get people well as quickly and as cheaply as possible, give them a really remarkable experience with one of the doctors or practitioners that we're speaking about, and get them excited about being, you know, being the change that they want to see in American medicine.
Well, that's a tremendously exciting vision. And actually, one of the knocks on complementary alternative medicine in America is that it's kind of elite medicine, it's kind of boutique-y medicine. You have to be kind of well-heeled to get yourself on a gluten-free diet, to shop at Whole Foods, to get treated for Candida or the yeast syndrome. These are sometimes thought of as snobbish affectations because it's only the rich that can seem to indulge in them because of just the economics of complementary alternative medicine. Often these procedures are not covered by insurance companies. I know that I'm off the grid when it comes to insurance reimbursement. Some of my patients get handsome reimbursements, some don't. But I've long since jettisoned from Medicare and from major insurance companies because they don't seem to see eye to eye with the treatments that I offer.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll see a lot more movement in that direction. And I think I'm hoping that once people get a whiff of this type of relationship, they'll never want to go back.
Okay. Well, so two ways that you're trying to engage. One is you're trying to engage practitioners to become part of this. And the other is on a pilot basis, you're recruiting members of the public. So tell us how that works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, over the last 8 years, I've developed a really good understanding of the professional integrative medicine world, not only developing and meeting thousands of doctors that actually this whole program that I'm talking about has really been built around listening to them and seeing what their needs are and seeing how we can solve this puzzle, but also getting more of an idea of some of the organizations that have great physicians. I know you're a past president of ACAM. I think there are other organizations like that that are very progressive in the way that they're educating doctors, functional medicine, and so forth. So yeah, we're working with a lot of those doctors, and they can sign up on our site to be a provider for Revive Primary Care, and we'll have details in next week how the system works. We think it, you know, what we're trying to do is make a great deal for everyone involved, a great deal for patients and a great deal for doctors, and then, you know, put those people together. So you can, you know, I'd love to, if you're a naturopath, if you're an advanced level chiropractor or acupuncturist, if you're a functional medicine MD, you will be hearing from me. But if you hear this and you'd like to get in touch with me now, you can go to Revive Primary Care and sign up as a provider. And if you're interested in being one of our members, in fact, we're going to be launching in October. We're going to take 100 initial members to test the system, put the patients through it, just make sure everything's working, and then hopefully get everyone ready for an exciting 2014. A lot of things are happening in the medical field by the beginning of 2014, and that's when we really want to move forward and say, hey, there's another way, and give more than that first 100 people an opportunity to experience this kind of medicine.
So what does it entail for a patient? You know, on the one hand, they would maintain their traditional medical coverage, correct? Because that's essential if they get into big trouble and, you know, if they need a specialist. But how would they get to be part of the Revive Primary Care program?
So you can come on and basically you can become a member. One of the things that we're seeing is that, again, with the education, it can be done a lot through the internet and so forth. So you sign up, you become a member. The initial membership price is $50, so it's not a lot of money by any means. You go through our special education program. That's a number of videos that cover the four causes of chronic disease, cover the holistic paradigm, cover some other interesting topics like the placebo effect, which is a topic for another day. I think is something we need to be maximizing and not be fearful of. And then once they've gone through that short education program, they then get a coupon for $100 to use at one of these other practitioners. So you get sort of like a Groupon style deal into working with these practitioners. And, that's your starting point to starting the relationship. And then after that, you get ongoing education from us. We're gonna hear from the best doctors out there talking about advances in medicine. So we've got a number of doctors lined up who are going to talk about their own unique take on medicine. People like David Perlmutter, whose book just came out today or yesterday,
right. Yep.
Brain.
David has been an outstanding guest here on our Intelligent Medicine podcast, and that book is, I think, really going to revolutionize the way that we deal with cognitive problems in the brain.
Exactly. We're going to bring that kind of education to people. And we're going to provide a lot of other value outside to really make this work. And so, you know, there's a lot that we can do. There's a lot that I want to do. You know, I think in any big project like this, it's an iterative learning experience. So if you're one of our first 100 members, you will actually hear from me. I will call you. We'll talk about what's going on, and I'll set you up with that doctor. I want to learn as much as possible. And then from number 101 to number 300 million, we'll have a fully integrated, scalable system to bring people through as patients, the education, and placing them with the doctor. And then we will go about speaking to doctors and essentially getting them to really up their game and provide our members with the best care. And I think that's the basis of developing the network of doctors, the network of patients, And I think once we have the attention of those two groups, I think we can really make something special and exceptional happen in the industry.
Well, it's certainly an impressive and ambitious vision that you hold out for American medicine, and I commend you for taking it on. You know, it's I think it's auspicious that you just celebrated the birth of your first child, and she's a little older now, and your attention is a little less diverted. Maybe you're sleeping through the night.
Yeah,
because you're going to need a lot of energy and stamina to do this.
Yes. Well, we're going to be doing, I'm going to spend the next 30 years doing something, Dr. Hoffman. And so it seems like this is worthy. You know, it does come back to the economics. If you look at it, I was an investment banker. There used to be this phrase that if America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. It's a sort of a medical phrase, but not really. It was really about, you know, stock issues and stock prices and so forth. And the truth is, I think that this American medicine is the biggest drag on the American economy.
Yes.
And the American economy is still the biggest and most influential economy. And so I feel like this is really, if we talk about leverage points, primary care is the leverage point to make a big difference in alternative, you know, to make a big difference in medicine. And I think that medicine is a big leverage point to make a difference to the American economy, the sustainability of it. And it's just at this point, people still take their cues from America. I don't know how long that's going to be. I think the Chinese are doing some amazing innovation with technology, you know, and so many renewable energy and so forth. But at the moment, people still take their, you know, what's new and what's exciting, especially in the tech world, from America. And so I think if we can have success here, I think the positive externalities, the benefits to society that are not paid for, that accrue to everyone, can be maximized. And I think that that is a worthy goal.
Well, it certainly is. And, you know, clearly we're hitting a crisis point in American medicine, and revived primary care hopefully will be one of the more important solutions in the 21st century. James Maskell, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on your launch this fall. And we want to direct all our listeners to reviveprimarycare.com. There's a lot of great resources there. And if you want to become one of those 100 pioneering patients, we encourage you to do so.
Thanks so much, Dr. Hoffman. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. All the best. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.